Dr. Myers, you had questions? Executive session?
Yeah, so. Okay, thank you. Dr. Huggins, so my understanding is that the records that Trilogy had were released to the court?
That's dependent upon context. While the child was in DCS's custody, dependency court takes precedence over family court. So yes, anything that was done by Dr. Hancock during that time, because even Judge Coffey wanted to keep her on given the previously established relationship with the family, to oversee, like oversight basically, those were all provided to dependency court based upon his ruling when that was made. Any and all other records that were with regard to family court, yes, they were provided both to the courts, because when you're court appointed by family court, you submit your reports directly to the judge and then to party's counsel. But any and all requests that were made even by her, subsequently, we provided them again, even just through her, because we didn't need a release of information or anything like that. It's like, okay, you want an extra copy? Here you go. They were always provided to her when she requested, except in the context of DCS, in which we had to go through them first, because they were the owner of the records.
Okay, thank you.
And those records that were, that SR requested that of her daughter, when her daughter was 18, you could not release those unless you had a written consent from the daughter to release those.
Correct. When she made the request in March, I consulted with Baron Akins, an attorney, and asked about the legalities of the situation given that she had turned the age majority. I was instructed or advised, I guess, that I would need a release of information. So I responded to her within 24 hours and gave her that same information, and she responded back and withdrew her request, and then subsequently, a few months later, made this complaint.
I'm understanding it, Dr. Huggins. Any of the records that you had the ability to release, you released, but those that had to go through the process, through the courts or through DCS, they were eventually released, but you had no control of releasing those to SR.
Basically, yes, that's correct. For that period of time when she was a ward of the state, all records were released to DCS because that's the protocol according to law, because they were the owner of the records. So anything even generated, which was very minimal, actually, because she was only doing kind of oversight, given her relationship established with the family, was released as ordered by dependency court. Any and all records that were generated as part of the family court history were released both to family court and any time she individually requested it, either to herself or through whenever she was represented by counsel.
Thank you for providing that clarity. Dr. Flowers, did you have any other follow-up?
Yes, I'm wondering, was there any time when records were not released due to concerns that it might jeopardize the safety or welfare of people, or was that, did that not apply?
I'm not sure if I understand.
Oh, okay. Let me interpret what I said. there are times when we don't release records because it might do injury to somebody or jeopardize their mental health or welfare. Was that ever applicable in this situation, as far as you know?
As far as I know, no. It was never applicable because that never arose. So I want to put that in a context of even the reference to being endangered in the car. All of those records have been released, and even the public records like the police reports and things like that. So it wasn't applicable, I guess, in the sense of the child was never any self-harm kind of thing, where it was never addressed, nor were records ever withheld in any kind of context that was in, I guess.
So I guess sometimes the records that SR wanted and requested from you, if they were not provided to her, is because you were not allowed. It had to go through other agencies in order to get them. You didn't own them, or Dr. Hancock did not own them, but they were released when they're supposed to, to whoever was supposed to receive them.
Correct. Like any
if
records.
If I'm understanding.
Yes. Any records that were generated while in dependency court time frame or hospitalized, we didn't generate any records, especially during hospitalizations, that we would have been in ownership of to release. Does that make sense? Like providers at the hospital would have provided
the
records. We didn't
it gets complicated.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, with all this going on, I did see the types of supervision you do. It looks as if you use, maybe you've changed it, but a form for a lot of people, depending on what they're doing with you at the time. And she's actually had, I guess, three times working with you in different capacities. Was she aware of your different role during the time she was an independent subcontractor about what you did and why, as far as supervision?
Do you mean was SR aware?
No. Dr. Hancock most likely had to know.
Oh, yes.
That you were not taking responsibility for her cases and so forth, as if had you been a clinical supervisor, depending on which type, you'd bear responsibility for the care and so on. But that wasn't the case at this segment of the time she's working with you.
Correct. Not during this time frame of the family court service provision. So as a practicum student, it was an Argosy template. As an intern, it was consortium again, so consortium forms. And as postdoc again, consortium forms.
It's a different relationship. And as I recall, too, you were not named in any court paperwork as having responsibilities for the services provided by Dr. Hancock. Is that correct?
Correct. For family court, I was never on any court order. I wasn't even mentioned. I was never appointed on a minute entry. I was never part of any court orders. The only reason Trilogy is even listed is because on the family court roster for the family court system, you have to put your location. So she lists Trilogy Psychological Services and the office address. But other than that, even the name or my name specifically has never been on a court document at all during SR's time.
Okay, good. He never co-signed anything over work on this because she was independent.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Meyer, any other questions?
No, sir.
Okay. Is SR, are you still on the telephone?
Yes. May I make one comment?
No, ma'am. You had your chance there. I just want to make sure that you're able to hear what's going on here. The committee will now begin deliberation.
Yes, I can hear.
The committee will now begin deliberation. Please note deliberation is a time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Flowers, would you begin?
Yes. As we all know, this complaint was made in the context of a very complicated family custody matter that was extremely difficult. SR, as we understand and as we heard from her and read, was concerned about the safety and welfare of her daughter, and she took actions she felt were needed to seek assistance. She was very displeased and is very displeased regarding how the court system and social services responded. Dr. Huggins served as the supervisor of the therapist that provided services to SR's family through the court system. Dr. Huggins was the therapist supervisor at several stages of the therapist's professional development. During the specific segment of the time when the social worker was providing the court-ordered services, the therapist, the social worker, was a licensed social worker and a subcontractor at Trilogy, which meant that Dr. Huggins did not have clinical responsibility for all of the clients that Dr. Hancock was working with, but had kind of an administrative oversight responsibility. And as I recall, when we, as a board, looked at similar complaints in complaint number 17-09, we discussed a lot of these issues before, and also concerns, and we read the complaints of SR in the documentation we had then as far as trying to get access to records. That was there before, and it was, again, voiced today, but it can be very difficult for clients and actually even professionals to navigate where you get records from whom and who's able to get them and so on. And SR, I think, was a great disadvantage as far as trying to figure out how to navigate all that. Dr. Huggins, it appears, has information and sought information, legal counsel to deal with those things, and did provide records as appropriate. Those are my main comments about the complaint.
Thank you.
And I invite other members of the board to make theirs.
Dr. Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still see significant concerns here, but I feel like this has already been reviewed on the previous complaint. So I don't see any action moving forward as it's already been addressed. If there's a possible new issue for this complaint would be the release of records, but I do think it's fairly clear that those records had to come from the court for the most part. For this case, I don't see anything that hasn't already been addressed.
Thank you. The crux of the complaint is the fail to provide clinical records despite multiple requests. And it's been clarified enough for me that the release of records was honored. And as Dr. Flowers has pointed out, it's for a client, for someone that's not involved in this process, and sometimes even for psychologists to understand the complexity of the different people to get involved in making and maintaining records. There's different ways of accessing those things that there's a legal process in which people must follow in order to access those records. You just can't jump out and get them just because you ask for them. It's got to go through a major process in some cases. Dr. Flowers, do you have a motion?
Yes, I make a motion the complaint 20-1 be dismissed as there's no evidence of statutory violation.
Second?
Would that motion also include the statement that you find that the matters are previously addressed and adjudicated by the board?
Yes.
I agree with that.
I would second.
Yes, we certainly made recommendations that have been made and apparently heeded.
I second.
Thank you. All in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed by the same sign? Motion carries. Thank you, Dr. Huggins. Thank you, SR. Moving to the next one is a complaint number 20-02. Dr. Flowers.
Yes. Thank you again. I'll give a brief summary of the complaint. In this one, it's RF 20-02. The complainant is AO. AO claims that Dr. Huggins did not provide adequate supervision to the social worker who worked at Dr. Huggins' company. In 2017, AO filed a complaint against the social worker with the Board of Behavioral Health examiners regarding concerns with the services of the social worker provided in 2015 as a court-appointed therapeutic interventionist. The Board of Behavioral Health examiners dismissed AO's complaint on September 15, 2017, as basically, the social worker entered into a consent agreement with the Board of Behavioral Health examiners regarding a complaint unrelated to AO's complaint. And we talked about that during the previous complaint, that she would not renew her license upon expiration April 30th, 2019, and not apply, submit a new application for social worker for a minimum of 5 years. In July 8th, 2019, the psychology board received AO's complaint. In that, AO indicates the social worker was court-appointed as the therapeutic interventionist. AO alleges that Dr. Huggins' lack of supervision caused harm to her family. AO believes that the social worker falsified notes, failed to produce session notes, and acted unprofessionally in her role as the therapeutic interventionist. AO said that the social worker did not respond appropriately to requests for records. AO alleges that the social worker's chart notes were fabricated after the sessions. AO believed that the social worker was under the influence of a narcotic medication following a surgical procedure when she offered a report to the court, even though the social worker denied the allegations. AO claimed that the court removed social worker as a therapeutic interventionist for her conduct and appointed a psychologist as the new therapeutic interventionist. After AO reviewed the Board of Behavioral Health Examiner's meeting notes for a different case involving the social worker where the members voted to place her in probation or on probation, AO questioned the social worker's ability to function as a therapist and if her license required supervision. And then AO subsequently confronted Dr. Huggins about the issue. AO said that Dr. Huggins denied being responsible for the social worker and responded, "Please do not assume I am Delina's direct supervisor of family court cases. She's independently licensed and approved to serve as a provider on the mental health roster on her own merits." Dr. Huggins' response stated that AO is a part of a group of unhappy family law litigants who rallied together through social media to file complaints against a social worker. Multiple complaints were filed against a social worker, but only one of the complaints resulted in discipline. And the consent agreement the social worker made, it was not in relationship to AO's case. Dr. Huggins represents that the same family law litigants are filing complaints against her years later based upon her previous supervision of the social worker. Dr. Huggins provides the following information about the litigation. The social worker was appointed by the family court in April 2015 and then relieved of her duties by the court in an order September 28, 2015. AO initiated the divorce proceedings and claimed that the father of their two minor daughters should not be entitled to parenting time. Despite the court orders, AO made disparaging comments about the father to the children, to the professionals involved with the family, and to the family court. It was the opinion of several professionals, including the social worker, that AO was attempting to alienate the father from the children. In a court order of February 11, 2015, AO was admonished by the court for her behavior. AO opposed the court's order for the social worker to try to reunify father and children and to proceed with supervised parenting time. After the social worker reported the mother's oppositional behavior to the court, AO sought to discredit the social worker and attacked her credibility in many ways. Social worker was an independent contractor at Trilogy, while serving as the therapeutic interventionist for the family. Social worker accepts assignments ordered by the Maricopa County Family Court under her license. This was the case with AO's family. Dr. Huggins was not included in any of the appointment orders or reports by the social worker. Dr. Huggins notes that there were two types of supervision, the direct supervision and clinical supervision. And in this case, she was given direct supervision, which was basically administrative rather than clinical. And that Dr. Huggins was not required to have clinical supervision in regards to AO's case. Kind of going through here, also Dr. Huggins said that she was not a guarantor of the social worker's activities and that it would be unreasonable to hold her to that level of responsibility. And in regards to documentation, Dr. Huggins stated that it was the social worker's responsibility to follow the documentation standards and ethical requirements of the Board of Behavioral Health Examiners. And she also believed that it was not the responsibility of a direct supervisor to advise a licensee on how to maintain adequate documentation. Due to these issues, Dr. Huggins requested that the complaint be dismissed. And that's the summary of the complaint.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Flowers. Is AO on the phone?
I don't believe so. She indicated that she might not be able to participate due to her work schedule. However, yesterday she did send me a statement that is in that I did send to all three members, and it's also in your books here as well, if you might want to review that.
Okay, since we just got this morning, and I know we've had opportunities.
Yesterday, I did email to the members. She just sent it yesterday afternoon, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, I did review that, and essentially she reiterates the same concerns and indicated that her patient load made it impossible or impractical for her to attend today.
Okay. Dr. Huggins.
Thank you again for the opportunity to address the board and this complaint specifically. I'm going to keep this one brief because much of what my statement would be similar to the previous one, given the nature of the complaints being very similar. I just wanted to point out a few facts, even though they are in the formal response that was submitted. She was only, receiving services at Trilogy from Dr. Hancock for approximately a 4, possibly 5 month time period, if I had my dates exact. Dr. Hancock, from what I recall reviewing the records, was not removed from the case per judge's order as a result of any conduct that she had done while providing those therapeutic interventionist services. It was just a matter of mom requested it, judge honored it. And she was also about to have medical surgery, so she didn't, counter the order in any way, so it just naturally occurred. I don't recall ever receiving any requests for records, so I'm unclear as to if records is an issue in this one. It's my understanding, again, that it's all about supervision, so the same sort of rebuttal, applies here, where I was only a direct supervisor. My only clarification is in one email correspondence with AO, I did say I'm not her direct supervisor, but I didn't mean it in the context of the two definitions of direct versus clinical. I just meant like I don't oversee, I have no control context. Again, not on any of the court appointments, not on any of the court records or the court documents. Again, given the short duration of her time period of providing services for this client, there was just the same amount of direct, by definition, supervision provided as needed. It was a very difficult case, but again, anytime any email correspondence came to me, which I believe was possibly 3 times, I did respond within a 24 or earlier time period, trying to clarify my role, that I would address her concerns with her provider, but that I had, again, no control over the course of a family court case. I was not appointed to it. There are certain stipulations on court orders or minute entries when the provider is appointed, so all records go to the courts. And her or counsel would have been provided the same sort of legal obligation of provision of records and or additional copies as requested by her. Eventually, the services, again, besides her being dismissed from the case by court orders to not be reappointed at mom's request. I forgot where I was going with that. There was only limited records to begin with anyway, because it's such a short time period. I think that's what it was. I think, other than sort of being the same circumstances of my role here, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Flowers, questions?
I don't have any questions. I in some respects, we've heard a lot already with this complaint and the previous one, and they're certainly not the same complaint, but there are many common themes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yeah, Dr. Huggins, I was surprised by the statement you made that you believe it's not the your responsibility to advise a licensee on how to maintain adequate documentation.
Again, not providing clinical supervision and only as an administrative direct supervisor, I can provide suggestions, but I was not about to advise her on exactly how to do it, because also within the domain of family court, when it's delineated out on a court order or a minute entry, they have certain ways and certain types of information they want provided. So you follow that to the letter, but as far as style, I didn't feel as a direct supervisor I could make anything beyond a suggestion.
Okay, so I guess so much of these issues are about confusion over roles. So if she was a subcontractor for you, you're running Trilogy Psychological Services, yet she can do whatever she wants and that's fine. What's the relationship there? Are you responsible for the product coming out of Trilogy? Are you responsible for the documentation done at Trilogy?
Essentially, I would answer yes to that question. However, again, this was issued, this specific issue actually was addressed at length in the Board of Behavioral Health complaint filed in 2017-2018 as well. So I can provide templates, I can offer suggestions. She's licensed by a separate board that has different standards as well. So in my profession, I tend to do overkill.
But do you have standards for your practice?
Yes. And timeliness
Trilogy.
Of dissemination and things like, yes, there's protocols as far as like timeliness of dissemination, following court orders and what's requested, making sure you're covering those things from my psychology perspective, so to speak. But this was also covered in that complaint too. This is an individual with a disability. So she's offered accommodations. I purchased software now back then in 2015 that she has utilized since. Now software changes all the time, so we're constantly trying to keep up with it. But that, so as far as like the product, typos, spelling errors, she has dyslexia. So it helps her with those sorts of things, like making sure it's complete sentences and whatever, if that's what you mean by product. But the product she had produced had never been questioned in court by judges, by counsel. It was only questioned in the context of the client who didn't feel they got what they wanted, but that didn't mean she wasn't producing an integrous, ethical, thorough product. I don't know if
so,
I'm answering your question.
So your view of Dr. Hancock's work was that it was clinically competent for documentation.
Again, not being a clinical supervisor of her and her,
but as a director of Trilogy,
it was meeting the standards required for family court. That's the only contact she was producing.
For your, well, was Trilogy paid for her services?
No, she was paid for her services. She's a 1099 subcontractor. I accepted money as in I took the card and ran it. She was paid from my account based on income of what was coming in from her clients for her.
Okay. So did her documentation meet the standards of Trilogy?
It's a pretty global question because my standards are based on a psychology board, and my standards of training and experience and what's expected of me. Her board has different standards, yet, yes, I would answer yes, because I hold them to a higher standard. But then if contextually you look at what's required, it's also based on who you're providing the records to and what their standards are. So in this role, for this complaint, she was a therapeutic interventionist. She was basically supervising visits. So that means documenting your supervision time session between father and children, and then producing a quarterly or monthly report for the judge based on your observations and what recommendations you might have based on that. Does that make sense?
Yes. My other question then is, at any time was Dr. Hancock a subcontractor for you and in a practicum or internship or postdoctoral position?
No. Again, this time frame is exactly the same time frame as the previous one, much shorter duration, but in 2015.
Okay.
And I have not had contact with this particular client since 2015 at all.
Okay. So, but there was never overlap of when you were a clinical supervisor and when she was a subcontractor?
Never.
But so you're supervising her now for her postdoctoral position?
We're finishing it, yes. Under her PsyD in school psychology through the Arizona Consortium.
And do you have any concerns about her ethical practice?
No. And I'm her secondary supervisor, but my answer is still no.
Okay. So that there had been multiple complaints against her, that wasn't a concern for you to continue working with her?
I was not concerned, but as best practice and as a measure of intervention, she was placed on a corrective action plan because as they started filtering in this group that's referenced in my response, I wanted to ensure that even though I felt during our direct supervision it was being adhered to all guidelines, ethical considerations, and timelines and everything, I still wanted documentation that we were adhering to anything and all expectations. So she was put on a corrective action plan, and that's also addressed in that Board of Behavioral Health complaint from before.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Flower?
Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
You wanted to just do a couple maybe follow-up questions.
Go right ahead.
I've, in my career, worked in many settings, and there are times I work with social workers, psychiatrists, and many other people. And in an agency, typically, there's like a quality assurance program or standards for records keeping. And I know currently I work with, they're like family counselors and that type of thing. But incredibly, our QA system is identical for all of us. I guess what they try to do, you know, work for the federal government. So it's always an interesting experience. But they're like generic standards. And certainly there are times when I do QA of my peers, I think they should do things, and I'm told, no, they don't have to do that by my supervisor. But it's a part of the setting. But I guess the reason I'm saying that is with your agency there, the Trilogy, you have some kind of similar thing where, like, regardless of their specific credential, that their standards that should be looked at and complied with?
Yes. Again, I hold her to the standard of my licensing board expectations and education and background and experience. And again, I put other things into place, like purchasing the software program with regard to documentation and note keeping. I purchased off the Zur Institute website that packet that you can of clinical forms, so which you're allowed to purchase and sort of tweak with your letterhead and stuff. So I purchased all those because I know that's a very, very high standard or model to follow, the product that he produces off his website. But between producing those sorts of documents and Theranest, irregardless, I don't know if I used that right, of what her board expectations would have been, and even the consumer, which in this case would have been family court, even what their expectations are for what needs to be included, yes, she's held, and so is everybody else, is held to the standards of psychology.
So maybe what you're saying is you didn't become an expert on family law and being a therapeutic interventionist to know everything they wanted, but in spite of that, you could see her records and clinically, but they met standards of Trilogy, but she obviously needed or should have known, or hopefully did, on top of what's required at the local agency, what's going to be required by the court as a therapeutic interventionist, and she needed to know that rather than you somehow being a supervisory therapeutic interventionist.
Correct. That wouldn't have been role to educate and train her on that, because again, she was on the family court behavioral health roster on her own merits, meaning she had their qualifications.
She had that, in a way, specialty or certification, whatever they want to call it.
Correct.
And I would imagine, I mean, as a subcontractor, your Trilogy did make some money from her work, though, right?
As with subcontractors, yes, I take a percentage off the top. It's a very minimal percentage for overhead.
Okay.
Meaning that you're using my electricity, kind of thing. So
But it sounds like she doesn't just rent space. There is some kind of accountability to your standards there.
Correct. Yes. No. Yeah. She doesn't. That's why records that go out to family court, for example, her progress reports to the judge would be on Trilogy letterhead, because that is listed on the roster as the location of services. So.
Okay. So you do have some awareness and concern for the quality of work, but you don't know all the details administratively of what's going to be required by the specific thing she's doing for the courts.
Well, I do by title, like as a therapeutic interventionist, just from my training and education and experience, know what's expected in that role.
That's great.
I didn't necessarily fine-tooth comb her report, so to speak.
No, because she really needed to know.
Yeah, that was, again, on her own merits, but yet there was never any negative feedback, I want to say, from the courts during her very short time as a TI.
Because, just wanted to clarify that, you weren't saying, well, as a direct supervisor, she could do clinically whatever she wanted to do and whatever note she wanted to do, that was fine and dandy. That wasn't the intent.
No, and even the software program that is utilized is based upon I call it like APA standards of note taking and keeping, and what fields you enter and where and how and what information you put in there, if that makes sense.
Okay, yes, thank you.
Dr. Meyer, you have any follow-up? Okay, thank you. The committee now will begin deliberation. Please note that deliberation is time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Flowers, would you please begin?
This complaint, again, was made in the context of a very complicated family court matter, and Dr. Huggins served as a supervisor of the social worker, who provided services to AO's family, and as stated before, Dr. Huggins has been the supervisor for Dr. Hancock at several stages of the social worker's professional development, but during this specific segment, the responsibilities were different because of being a direct supervisor rather than a clinical supervisor. So there was some oversight, but not with the intensity. Some of the allegations made by AO were very subjective and speculative, basically wondering or saying that she thinks some things were fabricated, some of the records were fabricated, and maybe some of them done while under the influence of narcotics. That just sounds like an accusation without any solid documentation of proof. So I believe it's similar to the previous complaint, but with a few different nuances. But again, I think this one can also be dismissed, but I like the input of the other board members as well.
Dr. Meyer?
Yeah. I do feel like, well, it's the same supervision in the same person, but there's additional information here. I'm concerned about all the blurred lines and lack of oversight for someone that's working in Dr. Huggins' agency and still is. That being said, I don't know that this, I guess, hasn't already been addressed in the previous claim. So those are my thoughts.
Okay, from Dr. Huggins' explanation of her business trilogy and the relationship to social worker, I find that I just think about the business relationships I've had, and while you do have different kinds of protocols and different expectations you have of people working for you, you expect them to carry out the best interests of the company. But there's a lot of latitude within those employees that they're able to reach different kinds of conclusions to situations that, in a lot of cases, hopefully are beneficial to the company, but sometimes they may or may not be. And I think at a point, a business person, all they can do is the manager of the business or owner of the business can just say, these are the protocols, and this is what I expect you to do, and occasionally you check up on and make sure that things are being followed, but you don't nail their hands to a specific way that you want things done. Otherwise, that becomes you instead of them. So I think Dr. Huggins has pretty well explained her position as far as the complaint goes, but lack of supervision, because that wasn't in Dr. Huggins' realm to determine for the social worker how she was supposed to handle her job. So other than maintain the protocols of the business. So I would move that this complaint number 20-02 be dismissed.
I second the motion, as there's no evidence of statutory violation.
Further discussion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed by the same sign? Motion carries. Thank you, Dr. Huggins. Okay, the next case is complaint number 20-03. Dr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On July 15th, 2019, the board received SL's complaint, which indicated the following. He notes that he and his wife live in Minnesota, but spend their winters here. He saw Dr. Olshan for his anxiety and depression issues in January, February, April, and May of 2019. SL represents that Dr. Olshan told him that his treatment would be accomplished by providing dynamic autogenic audio tapes. The claimant alleges that Dr. Olshan never provided him with psychotherapy and that the entire treatment consisted of the tapes, yet he did not receive a full tape. The complainant sent emails to Dr. Olshan in May, and Dr. Olshan replied that the tape would be sent within a matter of days, but that it was never received, despite follow-up emails. SL also alleges that when he arrived at Dr. Olshan's office for two sessions, Dr. Olshan was not at his office and did not advise that the session was canceled. SL believes that Dr. Olshan is guilty of unprofessional conduct for the following reasons. He never provided psychotherapy, which was paid for. He failed to provide the dynamic autogenic tapes, despite promising them on several occasions, and he refused to respond to SL's multiple emails. SL indicates that Dr. Olshan's wife is his administrative assistant and scheduler, and that she can confirm this complaint. In August 2019, board staff left a voicemail for SL requesting that he submit all of the emails that he sent to Dr. Olshan, and that over the weekend, SL received an email from Dr. Olshan who stated that SL's emails went to a spam folder, so he never saw the emails, but will send the tapes. Dr. Olshan asked SL to drop the complaint, which SL was willing to do if he received the tapes. SL submitted additional emails. SL could not attend because he is in Minneapolis. He made a couple of additional comments that he holds no ill will towards Dr. Olshan. And he repeated that there were some no-shows. That Dr. Olshan promised to send the tapes. Those were not received. The Dr. Olsham's response, he did not respond to a letter that was sent on August 19th, 2019 on the 20th, or his response was due on August 19th. On August 20th, the board emailed Dr. Olshan at his email address, and on August 21st, Dr. Olshan responded saying he forgot about the deadline and wanted to submit it, was asking for a deadline of September 26th. He was told that he had until 5 p.m. on August 26th to submit it. On August 26th, he requested to be called, but it went to voicemail. On August 27th, Dr. Olshan called board staff requesting additional time and said that he would submit it by September 2nd. On August 28th, he said that he had mailed it and it should arrive on the 3rd. On the 3rd, no correspondence was received. He said that he mailed it but forgot about the holiday, and that it should arrive the next day, but as of September 5th, no response was received. Today, or last night?
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, committee members, this morning, approximately 45 minutes before the start of our meeting, I did receive email correspondence from Dr. Olshan. It appears to be his response to the complaint. He indicates in there that he may not be able to attend the meeting today due to his work schedule. I did put this in the members' folders, and Dr. Flowers, I did forward the email to you this morning.
Okay, I didn't see it. I don't think that's enough time to to review it all. You know, like the morning of the meeting, that's not much time.
Well, and I mean, the concern about his, well, no, I guess that concludes the summary.
Okay.
Dr. Flowers?
I was going to say, well, I guess I can go to the, pull it up now and take a quick look, but I just don't think we can do much. He missed the deadline by a long, long time. And see here.
Well, are we ready to start deliberation, or?
He's not here to question anybody.
Just to clarify, Dr. Olshan is not present, and the complainant is not participating either.
Okay, we'll go into deliberation.
Okay, so, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dr. Flowers.
Oh, I think Dr. Meyer was the lead, though, right?
Dr. Meyer, go ahead.
Okay. So he has not submitted the information that we requested. While he tried to provide some kind of response, he emailed confidential clinical records in an unsecure fashion. I mean, so that's another potential violation. So I think that he's been given multiple extensions to his deadlines without a sufficient response. So at the very least, he's in, I would suggest that he's in violation of ARS 32-2061-16 BB, failing to furnish information in a timely manner to the board. So we can't evaluate whether there's been other violations because he hasn't supplied additional information.
Okay, but board staff, did you say that we actually did receive notification or anything from him then this morning? He did submit a statement or gave information?
That is correct, Dr. Flowers. This morning at approximately 7:49, he did send an email to me making a statement. I don't know if this is considered his response to the complaint. He didn't clarify in the email, so I'm not sure. But just to clarify, when okay. I had previously corresponded with him, he did indicate that the response would be mailed and delivered to our office by September 3rd. We did not receive that, and I had reached out, and okay. he indicated that he would email it, but never sent anything. So we never received anything, and he never communicated with me after that until this morning. I had not received anything from him.
Okay, so this morning we just were told we still didn't have anything, or he still hasn't given it to us?
Well, I forwarded his correspondence to you, Dr. Flowers, this morning. I apologize, okay. You're not here, but he did send me an email at 7:49 this morning, and it appears to be a statement, so I don't know if this is considered his response to the complaint, but he seems to be addressing some of the complaint allegations.
Okay, I guess I don't see it in my business email, and but, you know,
regardless,
you know, I also,
Calvin, would this be considered a response, his official response?
I would view it as a response, given the content of it, but it is way overdue, and you are not obligated to consider it at this late date, or you can table
okay.
it. And
it's like 40 minutes prior to the meeting.
Right. You could table the matter and give the members time to consider it or take a break and review it. Or if you're feeling like there is some possible violation, you're going to refer to this matter to the board, it'll go up with the board. I know, Dr. Meyer, you suggest that there's a possible violation for failing to submit documentation upon request of the board or the committee. I don't know if you feel that there's a violation with respect to the underlying conduct that would go to the board as well?
Right. Well, I think possibly there is. So.
And that's all this committee is asked to determine is whether there's a possible violation.
Okay.
I definitely think there is.
Yeah.
Well, he's postponed this and postponed this and postponed this.
Yes.
At this late date. And then he also says in the thing here that he has on May 18, 2019, he emailed three custom dynamic autogenic CDs to SL. But he doesn't provide any evidence that he did do that.
Okay.
To me, reading all this stuff, he likes to play games. I mean, but it went in my spam file, so I didn't get it. That's, well, you're supposed to check your spam file every now and then to make sure that you're, at least as a professional, I certainly would, see if there's something I'm missing that I should be getting.
So,
yes, Mr. Chairman, go ahead. I want to make comments as well, but go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Looking for a motion, I guess, as the chairman.
Oh, okay. I wanted to make comments and a motion as well, additional comments, other than I'm unhappy that you didn't respond quickly. But I don't like the idea of delaying this due to his inaction.
Right.
I think it should go forward, and it's like if you want to not respond, which is a violation, okay, we can go at least with that one. But looking at the allegations of the complainant, you know, what I wrote down here was, you know, I think it can be referred to the board for an initial review for possible violations of ARS 32-2061, 16 on professional conduct, including A, obtaining a fee by fraud or misrepresentation, A, gross negligence in the practice of a psychologist, H, failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to the psychological services provided to a client or patient, O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice, and then, as mentioned by Dr. Meyer, BB, failing to furnish information in a timely manner to the board or investigators or representative if requested or subpoenaed by the board as prescribed by this chapter. I believe those are all possible violations. Indeed, it'd be great if we had some documentation from them to respond to them. But just on the basis of what the complainant says, these are possible violations. And also the fact that we have like a receipt of bills or whatever payments to Social Security or whatever for services, psychotherapy and so on, complainant said he never received. So those are the, you know, it's minimal, but there is some there. So that's my input, and wanted, before I make it a motion, want to hear your opinions.
I agree. I think I'm in support of moving it forward to the board.
I am also. So you're making that
okay,
motion,
then
Dr. Flowers?
Yes, what I said before, I make a motion for those things I stipulated.
Other discussion?
Is there any discussion with respect to the doctor's request and communication with the complainant that he retract the complaint after it was already filed? Would that be something that would be considered?
Well, it's clearly inappropriate.
Right.
I don't know that we could include that here. And also, I think we need to subpoena him to attend and also provide his records.
And we could make that request. Do you want the staff to issue a subpoena for his appearance at the board meeting? And a subpoena,
yes,
for the records. He in the response, whatever he submitted this morning, he did type out
some paragraphs that I think he's representing were notes, but the way they're typed, it doesn't appear to be an exact version of the notes that were taken because it's a summary or something.
These aren't appropriate records. We want to see if he actually had documentation, so.
Right.
I'd like to subpoena his records.
Not the summary.
Yeah, we.
Right.
Yeah, we don't want highlights. We don't want his highlights through non-secure email, you know, those kind of things. This needs to be taken seriously and dealt with.
Right, and I previously requested him to submit the response, I said that he submit the client record with that as well, which, of course, we don't have here today. So after the meeting, I will follow up with sending a subpoena for his appearance at an upcoming board meeting as well as a subpoena for the entire client record.
Great, and I guess, of course, the complainant can be invited to attend, which would be good. He may not want to, but he can be invited.
Yes, he will be sent notification, and I did previously make him aware that he could participate via phone since he was out of state. However, he declined at this point, but he might change his mind in the future.
Okay, great. Oh, thank you.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed by the same sign. Motion carries. So this number 20-03 will be referred to the full board for review and possible violations as so stated. Motion.
Perfect.
Next one. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So motion.
I shall move. I second.
All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Opposed by the same sign. Motion carries. There was no further deliberation for that one. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.